Good morning. Today's daf in Rosh Hashanah, Lamed Gimel. We're on Lamed Beis, Amud Beis. We are at the Mishnah. There are two Mishnahs on the bottom of the Amud, so we are at Mishnah number one. Here in the fourth parak of the Masechta, we're talking about the mitzvah of shofar in the context of Rosh Hashanah. So there is, start off with a really good statement, there is a mitzvah to blow shofar in Rosh Hashanah. So in the third parak of the Masechta, so we've been detailing the shofar itself in terms of what are going to be the specifications of a shofar, what qualifies it, what disqualifies it. So that was the third parak of the Masechta. And here in the fourth parak, we're talking now about putting the shofar in the context of Rosh Hashanah and blowing shofar in Rosh Hashanah. And tomorrow's daf, so they're only after today, only two left, and even that, the Shabbos daf is really short. But in tomorrow's daf, we're going to get an instructional manual in terms of how to blow shofar, right? As an oddity, you'd figure that it would get a lot of real estate over here in our Masechta, and it does not get a lot of real estate in the Masechta. There's only one daf, maybe a daf and a half in the Masechta detailing exactly how to blow the shofar. So that comes up tomorrow. In the meantime, however, we're going to be talking about specifically when to blow the shofar. So, as we all know, so the mitzvah of shofar could be done principally any time during the day, meaning the Torah is not specific about when to do the mitzvah. The Torah just simply says, you blow shofar in Rosh Hashanah. Okay, but what the Chachamim did is that they incorporated into the davening. So what they did is that they created a davening in such that the mitzvah of shofar now could be done during the actual davening itself, and specifically the Musaf. We already spoke about yesterday, right? We did a big Mishnah yesterday on Lamed Beis. Mishnah Lamed Beis Amanal talks about the special Shemoneh Esrei on Rosh Hashanah. Now, I'm going to say it's during Musaf because that's what we do, and that's most of the Rishonim. There are some Rishonim I cited yesterday, the Balmore specifically, who says that the Shemoneh Esrei for Rosh Hashanah is for every Shemoneh Esrei, but let's call it the Shemoneh Esrei of Musaf. So it is tailor-made, it is designed, custom-fit for the mitzvah of Shofar. So that means to say that the three central brachas of the Rosh Hashanah Shemoneh Esrei, the Musaf Shemoneh Esrei, is going to be so that we could blow Shofar. And that's exactly what we do. In other words, after each of the middle sections of Machios, of Zichronos, and of Shofros, so we're going to be blowing a series of Tkiyas. In tomorrow's daf, we're going to be talking about how it is that we're blowing so many more times than what the Torah that instructs. Well, we haven't learned yet how many times the Torah instructs us to blow shofar. That'll come up in tomorrow's daf. So we'll hold off on that discussion until tomorrow's daf. Okay. Something I didn't mention yesterday, and it's a short daf today, so I'll just mention it on the front end. It's really fundamental. Sefer Yikarim. Sefer Yikarim was written by Rav Yosef Albo. So he was a Rishon. So he gives us the Kari Emuna, the fundamental principles of what we need to believe in. So first formulated by the Rambam. The Rambam put together a list of Ikari Emuna, basically fundamental tenets of and principles in terms of what we need to believe. You want to be a believing Jew, so you have to have certain things that we need to believe in. So the Rambam lists it out. So the Rambam gives us a pretty extensive list. It's 13 items. Okay, it's not a terribly long list, but still, in other words, in terms of what are the fundamental beliefs, so the Rambam gives it number 13. The Sefer Ikarim, so what he does is he reduces it to three. He writes, he's not in disagreement with the Rambam, he is in total agreement with the Rambam. It's just a question of how to organize the beliefs. But he writes, so in the Sefer Ikarim, okay, I'm sorry, I'm not quoting inside and I'm just paraphrasing it outside. I'll just say quickly, but it is really fundamental. So he writes over there in the Sefer Ikarim that the three sections, the Machlis, Zichronos, V'Shofros, so they correspond to the Ikari Imuna. In other words, these are the fundamental principles. So Machlis, he writes, that's the Imuna, the belief that there is a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and that he's in fact the king of the world. So the fact that there is an entity, a force which is omniscient, omnipotent. So all that. So he writes that's Machios. Good. What is Zichronos? Zichronos is the fact that Kadosh Baruch Hu has Hashkacha. In other words, that he supervises what goes on in this world. He didn't just simply create the world and then let it just run on its own, but rather there's constant Hashkacha. That's Zichronos. So that's Hashkacha, Hashkacha Klalis, Hashkacha Pratis, good. And then we get to Shofros. So Shofros writes the Sefer Ikarim. So that's in reference to Mamad Har Sinai and the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Torah, and the Torah is coming directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that is the third of the central Ikari Imuna of the of Rav Yosef Abba. And then he goes on to write, and he says that so what the Chachamim did is that they gave us an annual checkup, meaning that what we do on Rosh Hashanah when we say the Machiz Zichron Feshofros is that we're reminding ourselves of the Ikari Emunah. Okay, especially on Rosh Hashanah when we're being judged. Good. Anyway, for more, see the Sefer Yikarim inside. Anyway, that's basic. With all that stated, now we're going to be talking about when to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah. So again, so we know it's during Musaf. Tomorrow's daf, maybe a little bit more details because our minhagim are a little bit different than the Gemara. We blow shofar before Musaf, what's called Tkiyas de Miyushav. It is based on a Gemara that we did earlier in the Masechta and at the midpoint of the Masechta. So we touched on this Tzayin, I believe. But anyway, but not for now. In other words, right now, let's go back to the Gemara, the Mishnah, and let's start with the Mishnah. Over lifnei teva. So somebody's davening for the amud, right? Over lifnei teva is an expression used to describe somebody davening. So b'yom tosh Rosh Hashanah hasheni matgia. So what's going to happen now? So your second chazan. What does that mean? Your second chazan. So the assumption over here is that we're basically we have chazan number one who's davening shacharis, and chazan number two is davening musaf. So your second chazan is going to be matkia. He's the one who's going to be blowing shofar. Now, matkia over here can mean blowing shofar, or matkia could also mean that he's responsible for the blue shofar being blown, meaning he could be the makri. So can you have your actual shliach sibra also be blowing shofar? Okay, open for a discussion, right? We're not going to have it now, but it's certainly open for a discussion. Certainly, it's going to be hard to keep everything straight, meaning davening for the amud and blowing shofar. Okay, we'll leave it alone. But the point of the Mishnah is that shofar is blown during Musaf. Uvishas ahalo, harisha makri sahalo. Now, as far as halo is concerned, so who's going to be saying halo? So the Rishon, meaning the one responsible for shacharis. Okay, in other words, halo is more connected with shacharis, which is, of course, what we do. We say halo immediately after the Shemona Esrei, and And as far as shofar is concerned, shofar is more connected with musaf. Shofar is blown during musaf. I'll talk more about it tomorrow in tomorrow's daf when we go through the actual gemaras. But I'll just simply mention it now in terms of when during musaf we blow shofar. So universally, everyone blows shofar during chazar shashats. That's a universal. Doesn't matter which variety of Yiddishkeit you subscribe to, Ashkenaz, Sfard, Chassidish. It doesn't matter. Everyone does it during Chazar Sashas. What about during the Silent Shemona Esrei? So that's based on Minhagim. So some have the Minhag to blow during Silent Shemona Esrei. Some don't have the Minhag. I'd say most Ashkenazim don't blow during Silent Shemona Esrei. I'd say every Sfar does blow during Silent Shemona Esrei. Okay, and then Chassidim do. Okay, not for now. But anyway, in terms of the Silent Shemona Esrei, so that is subject for that is relative to various Minhagim. Anyway, so in the Mishnah, we are given a clear picture of the fact that shofar is blown during Musaf and halos during Shacharis. Now, halo during Shacharis, hopefully you're wondering, right, what's going on over here? There is no halo on Rosh Hashanah. So stay tuned because that is coming up in the Gemara. Anyway, we start with the Gemara, Mishnah Sheni Matkia. So why? Why are we pushing off shofar till Musaf? Now, based on everything I've been saying up until now, the answer is because Musaf was built for shofar, but the question just simply is a revolving door. Meaning, why did they make Musaf tailor made for shofar? Why not blow shofar earlier? And in fact, we could certainly make the argument that it'd be better to blow shofar earlier because your first opportunity to do a mitzvah. So we have the principle of zrizim makim la mitzvahs. So why not blow shofar earlier? So the Gemara's answer is mishum debarav am hajas melech. So the Gemara says, okay. So we also have another competing principle, and that's Rov Am Hajas Melech. It's better to do something when you have a bigger congregation. And yes, the Gemara is in fact saying there are going to be more people in Shul by most of them by Shacharis. Right? There is no dancing around it. The Gemara is absolutely saying that. Okay, but, right? Okay, it's both funny and it's true, which is why it's funny. So the Gemara says is that when you have a bigger audience, so Rov Am Hajas Melech, it's a bigger hider. It's just simply the mitzvah is qualitatively better. It's however you want to phrase it. It's simply better when you have more people there. So the Gemara says Halanami, sorry, Ihachi Halanami, naming Bisheni Misham Debrav Am Hajas Melech. So good. So now that you introduced me to this topic, that it's better to do it with more people. So why don't we just push off halal? Meaning, let's have halal being done during Musaf, based predicated on the principle of Rov Am. So Ela Maishna Halal Debarisha Mishum Dezrizim Akdim La Mitzos. So the Gemara says, okay, because I want Also, the competing principle is Rizim Makim LaMitzvahs. Do the mitzvah as soon as possible. Hallow's a mitzvah. So we want to do it as early as possible. So therefore, we're going to move it to Shacharis. You know what the next question of the Gemara is going to be. So, Tkiya Nami, Navid Barisha, Mishum de Zrizim Makdim LaMitzvahs. Good. So I now have competing principles. I got the principle of Zrizim Makdimim. The earlier, the better. I have another principle of Rav Hamad Jos Melech. That means the more people that are there, the better. It's a bigger hitter. It's more glory to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Zrizim tells me to do during Shacharis. Rav Hamad Jos Melech tells me to do during Musaf because the reality is, and it's been this way now for a long time, there are just simply more people in Shul the later in the morning that it gets. So for Hallel, I'm going to be favoring Zrizim. And then for Shofar and Rosh Hashanah, I'm going to be favoring Rav Hamad Jos Melech. So the Gemara says, I'm so confused. So Amar Rav Yochanan b'shas gzeiros ha-machushanu. So Rav Yochanan gives an explanation. Quite frankly, it's not much of an explanation, meaning the Gemara really gives us very little details, but the Gemara says it's historical. There was a shas gzeira. There was a time of some sort of governmental decree. And so as a result of that, so the Musaf got pushed off later. What is the Gemara here making reference to? Again, the Gemara is so sparse in terms of its description. Take a look at Rashi. So Rashi writes, "Bishas gzeiros ha-machushanu." So oivim gazru shalo yitku vayu orvim lahem kol sheishals lakates tefila shacharis lakach evir l'tkobem musafim. Okay, so again from Rashi, we're given also precious little detail, but we're just given just a kernel more, which is that what Rashi describes over here is that there was some point historically where if we blew shofar, it would lead to trouble. Rashi doesn't say why. And what they were doing is they were waiting for the first 6 hours of the day, basically the morning, from morning till about midday. So they were waiting to hear shofar. They didn't hear shofar. And so they thought, okay, fine. We're all good. And so that's why shofar was moved to Musaf, because Musaf was typically done sometime in the early afternoon. Okay. Now what the Gemara doesn't tell us is, okay, good. So that explains why we are no longer going with Zrizim Makdim LaMitzvos during that kufa, during that historical time. Okay, but obviously, thank God. So we live in a time where, if we blew shofar in the morning, so it wouldn't be viewed as a revolt. And meanwhile, we kept it at Musaf. So it's one of those situations where there was a historical reason why it was moved to Musaf. And then once it's there, so it got locked into Musaf. The Gemara doesn't give us the details why it was locked into Musaf. And again, we're not really given a full picture over here. There's still a principle of Zrizim Makdim LaMitzvos telling me that I really should move it to the early morning. But again, because of this historical event, so therefore it was pushed off to Musaf. Take a look at Tosfos over here. Again, really little details over here regarding what exactly we're describing over here. Tosfos b'shas gzeiros ha-machus shana v'alfa pisha shebala gzeiros ha-machus lo avdin kidmi kara afagav d'zrizim makim lamitzvos techayshin et shema yachzor darva l'kil kulo. Okay, so Tosfos basically is bothered by what I presented, meaning once gzeiros ha-machus is gone, so why not move it earlier? So Tosfos says, well, we're uncertain about the political climate, and there may come a point in time where it's going to be needed to be instituted again. So basically, we keep it at Musaf. We're always going to be in the state of uncertainty, and we'll keep it at Musaf. Good. That's Tosfos is certainly sensitive to this issue of why not just move it back to Shacharis. He quotes the Yerushalmi. Well, the parish of Yerushalmi nicha tvei the mefarish sham shedamu ha'oivim shenitasu letkoa trua melchama v'amdu aleihem v'hargum v'lakach tiknu tkiyas v'brachas b'musaf d'chichazu d'kara b'kriya shema mispalim v'korim b'torah v'chozim mispalim v'token amre b'nimusehu inon askinon v'chukeihem u'v'sarasam. So a quick, I read it quickly, but just basically outside what the Yerushalmi describes is the following. Moving shofar from Shacharis to Musaf is not just for one historical period of time, but basically it tells the non-Jewish world and the non-Jewish audience, we're not looking to make war. Meaning, imagine, right? This is, I'm paraphrasing the Yerushalmi. I'm just giving a brief description. Imagine we all congregate together in one building early in the morning and we blow shofar. Okay, so without any context whatsoever, it could look like a war cry. Could look like, okay, that's it. We're getting ready to assemble and we're looking to revolt. However, right, the Yerushalmi writes, right, I read it, I just read it. Yerushalmi writes, however, if we get together in the building and first we say Shema and then we say Shemoneh Esrei, and so, and any outsider who's looking is like, oh, you know what that's called? It's called services. It's called they're practicing the religion. So then later after that, once we blow shofar, so now the understanding is that no, there's no revolt over here. This is just part of their religious practices. So just to make it look like this is not any kind of revolution or any kind of assembly for revolt, so first we're going to daven, and then after we daven, now we're going to be blowing shofar, and everyone understands that's a religious activity. That's the Yushami's description. Okay, so we're going to go back. We are almost up to the Gemara Midikamar. We are just picking up right where we left off. Midikamar b'shas halal mechal de Rosh Hashanah like a halal. So now, if you read the Mishnah carefully, it says uvishas halal. Now, when we're saying halal, so the Gemara now picks up right away. Meaning on Rosh Hashanah, we're not going to be saying halal. So on Rosh Hashanah, we're just going to be talking about the tokeya and shofar. But on any other yantuf, we are going to be saying halal. Oh, and when we say halal, so then you're going to move it up to shachar. So already the Gemara just picked up right away that if you read the Mishnah carefully, what you're going to get from the Mishnah is that we're not going to be saying halal on Rosh Hashanah. Okay, good. So we can now put the question aside. Why we don't say halal on Rosh Hashanah? What's the Mishnah talking about? The Mishnah, read carefully, is telling us that we don't say halal on Rosh Hashanah. Okay, good. Now, obviously moves us to the next question. Why don't we say halal on Rosh Hashanah? Meaning Rosh Hashanah is a yantiv. So I'm sure you noticed on every yantiv we say halal. With notable exception to the balance of the remaining days of Pesach. The remaining days of Pesach, we don't say halal. The Gemara Megillah, does it explain why not? I don't know, but the Gemara Erechim for sure does. Okay. So the Gemara Erechim Daf Yud, so it goes over in detail why it is that we don't say halal on the balance of the days of Pesach. But outside of that, every yantiv we say halal. So the Gemara is now going to ask the question. My timer. So what's the reason? Why don't we say halal on Rosh Hashanah? I think we're all familiar with the answer. The answer comes straight out of the Gemara. So I'm Rabbi Abahu, I'm Ramalach Esher Sofnei Hakadosh Baruch Hu Ribono Shel Olam. Mimnei Ma Ein Yisrael Omrim Shiru Lefanecha Rosh Hashanah V'Yom Kippurim. So the Malachim are bothered by this very same question. Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. They're called Yomim Tovim. It's Moed. So why not say halal? So the Malachim ask Hakadosh Baruch Hu, Amar Lahem, Hakadosh Baruch Hu's response. After Malach Yosef Akisei Din V'Sifrei Chaim V'Sifrei Meisim Pesuchim Lefanav V'Yisrael Omrim Shira, just not appropriate, right? The Sifrei Chaim Sifrei Meisim Book of Life Book of Death is open and presented in front of everybody, and now at that point in time, now is the time to say hello. Just not an appropriate time to do so. The day's too solemn. It's too serious. The stakes are too high. It's just not an appropriate time to say hello. Okay, so here you find a convergence of halacha nagarata. Meaning, as far as the halacha is concerned, it's yantiv, you should say halal. And then what happens is that we have an agadic statement of the Gemara. And this happens every time. You have this kind of convergence, where basically an agadic explanation is going to explain why it is that we're not going to be saying halal. Okay. But that's the Masorah, and that obviously is for the conclusion. We don't say halal neither in Rosh Hashanah nor in Yom Kippur. Okay. Mishnah. Next Mishnah. Shofar shel Rosh Hashanah in ma'avir nalav esat chum. So what the things you cannot do with the shofar in Rosh Hashanah, so you can't go beyond chum. It's a mitzvah to blow shofar in Rosh Hashanah, sure. But there's also a mitzvah to observe yantiv and to observe Shabbos. And so that means to say that if I have any violation that needs to be done in order to do the mitzvah of shofar, I'm not going to be able to violate not Isuri deraisa, not even Isuri derabanan. Now, we already discussed this before. The blowing of shofar itself may involve an Isser de Rabbanan, but there, obviously, the Chachamim repealed. In other words, you're not allowed to produce music, not allowed to make sounds on Shabbos and Yantav. But what they did is they obviously repealed that for the mitzvah of shofar. So, in other words, they're not going to legislate in order to negate a mitzvah. That's not going to happen. However, if there's anything external, like taking it from outside of Tchum, so there the Chachamim said, no, you're not going to be able to do the mitzvah. Okay. I got it.
Can you break it for Mila? Did we learn that we could do something on
the mitzvah of Mila itself? You can do on Shabbos. Anything external, you can't do. Now there is a sheet of Rabbi Eliezer that machshire Mila or doches a Shabbos. Good, but that we don't paskin like that. That's not the position that we accept. So shofar shel Rosh Hashanah ma'avir alav es hatchum mefakhin alav es hagal. If you need to dig through dirt in order to get to the shofar, it just got piled on for whatever reason. You can't do that. So you can't climb up a tree to get it. You're not allowed to climb on an animal in order to, I don't know, ride to it. Whatever the case is. Meaning you can't violate Nadi Suri Darabanan and what we've been, I'm sorry, Nadi Suri Daraisa and what we've been describing right now, which are Isuri Darabanan. V'lo shatan al panei amayim, and you can't float on water. I mean, you can't swim in order to get it. V'in cholkano osa bein bedavar shu mishum shvus. Ubein bedavar shuhu mishum lo sasa. What about cutting the shofar? For whatever reason, the shofar needs to be cut down to a workable size, to a functional size. You can't cut it on Rosh Hashanah. Cutting it, even if the act of cutting would only be nisa derabanan. Gemara is going to explain how does that work? How are you cutting it? And it's only nisa derabanan. The Gemara is going to go over there. Aval im ratz litein lasocha mayim oyan yitein. Okay, so all the don'ts, meaning so you can't violate any nisa derabanan in order to obtain a shofar for Rosh Hashanah. Got it. The Mishnah says, however, what you can do is you can flush it. You can flush it with water. You can flush it with wine. Okay? I use a stronger alcohol. So I pour it on one side. And then my classic joke, of course, is that my mouth is on the other side. So does it work? Yeah, what's it called? It works either way. So lesocha mayim oyan yitein. Ein ma'akvin esetinokos melitkawa. So, and the Mishnah goes on to describe that. Let's say your kids want to blow shofar, so don't stop them from doing that. Now, the Mishnah over here is saying, and the Gemara is going to pick up on this. The Mishnah is not saying, hey, give him a shofar and let him go to work. But in other words, if he's running around and he's blowing shofar, so, and it's Rosh Hashanah, and the Gemara is going to note, even if it's Rosh Hashanah Shabbos, let him go and let him blow. Until, of course, you get a headache and you've had enough. But that's just a personal decision. But as far as the halacha is concerned, so you want to encourage them to blow shofar. Obviously, they're not fulfilling a mitzvah, and obviously, they're not fulfilling the mitzvahs for other. But as the Gemara is going to point out, well, we'll see in just a moment, there is a chinuch consideration, and therefore, let them blow. So, ava misaskin memahem, machiyomadu. Okay. And then, but the Mishnah says, misaskin, meaning that you promote. And the Gemara is going to notice that the Mishnah over here is a little bit confusing in terms of our attitude. Meaning the first line of the Mishnah is Ein Ma'akvin, which means don't stop them from blowing it, which certainly does not sound like any kind of promotion or encouragement. And then the Mishnah says, oh, and encourage them and promote them. So the Gemara is going to pick up on that, and the Gemara is going to respond. V'hamisasik lo yatsa. Now, if you're blowing shofar, but you're doing so absentmindedly, you're not going to be yotze. This seems to be touching on the issue that we discussed a couple days ago of kavana. Stay tuned. V'hashomeh minamisasik lo yatsa. Let's say somebody's blowing shofar, and he's simply not, his head's not in the game. He's not looking to perform the mitzvah, and you hear from that individual, lo yatsa, you haven't fulfilled your obligation. Okay. Good. We start with the Gemara. My time is shofar ase huva yamta vase velo sase venase doche es lo sase vase. So the Gemara, not even in one line, just simply takes care of why can I not violate yantav in order to fulfill a mitzvah? Meaning we, generally speaking, have a rule of ase doche lo sase, a positive commandment overrides a negative prohibition. So shofar is a mitzvah, sase, it's a positive commandment. The safeguarding of Shabbos and Yantav, that's a lo sase. So why not? Why not have shofar, which is a mitzvah sase, go ahead and override the lo sase? Now, even as we speak out the Gemara's question, it still is a little bit tricky though, because in other words, we're not talking about the blowing of the shofar. We're talking about all the preparatory stages in order to get us to the mitzvah of blowing the shofar. So really, it requires us to think a little bit more whatever. There's a lot to unpackage over here. We're really not talking about the actual mitzvah sase. We're talking about the stages and steps leading up to the mitzvah sase. But the Gemara still assumes, okay, but still, the essay should override the lo sase. And to that, the Gemara's response is, nah. And the reason why is because yontif itself is not just a lav, it's not just a lo sase, it also is an essay as well. And so since yontif is made up, it's a composite of both an essay and a lo sase, so therefore shofar is not going to be able to override it. Gemara is bothered by, once I've learned in the Mishnah that I can't violate Yisuri Derabanan, so like it's a kavachomer, it goes without saying I can't violate Yisuri Deraisa, so why would the Mishnah why is the Mishnah spelling everything out? So the Gemara says stylistically, that's simply a style of the Mishnah. Zu ve'in tzarich lomar zu. Meaning sometimes the Mishnah does it. In other words, I'll say this, which already tells me, in other words, I'll tell you that you can't violate the Yisuri Derabanan, and ein tzarich lomar zu, and I don't even have to tell you this, even though I'm telling it to you. But it's just simply a style of the Mishnah. That's how the Mishnah sometimes operates. Magla. Lo sase sakina. Okay, so the Gemara over here says, look, In terms of cutting, so cutting can sometimes be an issa d'rabbanan, sometimes it can be an issa d'araisa. When is it going to fall under which category? The answer actually is really simple. It depends if it's darko, if that's the normal way in which I cut. If I'm cutting with something that I normally cut with, i.e. I cut with a knife, so under those circumstances, that is an issa d'araisa. If I'm cutting with a maglo, I don't know what that is. It doesn't matter. It's some sort of cutting device. What do they describe it?
A sickle.
Okay. It's good. So it's some sort of cutting device that I don't normally cut the sharper with. So that's what's called the shinui. Okay. So a shinui is not an issa d'araisa. It's still an issa d'rabbanan. And so therefore the Gemara says is that even though it's done al yedei shinui, you can't do that. So hasha mishum shvus amart lo sase mi baizu vein tzarech lomar zu katani. And then the Gemara just repeats, and I'm not really sure why the Gemara is repeating this. So the Gemara wants to know, if I can't cut with something that is only an issa d'rabbanan, so I certainly can't cut with an issa d'araisa, why does the Mishnah have to say that? And again, the Gemara's response is, it's stylistic. Okay, again, I don't really know why the Gemara has to repeat that point immediately after we just learned it on the bottom of the previous Amud. Okay, we go on. You want to flush your shofar, clean it out, that's fine. Meaning, what the Mishnah is telling us is that maybe we could have considered the fact that's some sort of tikkun, or some sort of fixing of the shofar. Maybe it's some sort of issa d'rabbanan. And what the Mishnah is telling us is that no, flushing out would be fine. The Gemara is just going to be focusing on the flushing agents, meaning mayim oyayin in may raglayim lo. So what you could use is that you could use water, you could use wine, but you shouldn't use urine. Okay, now it's kind of intuitive, meaning especially when you consider the fact that your mouth is going right on it. So it is kind of intuitive, but we've seen numerous times throughout Shas that it happens to be that they viewed urine as a really good cleansing agent. And so, it doesn't speak to you and I, but it doesn't speak to me. But nevertheless, it's at least on the table for consideration. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, yeah, the Mishnah made a choice, meaning the Mishnah elected not to use urine because the Mishnah is of the position you can't use urine. Why? Because the Mishnah subscribes to the opinion of Abishal. Detanya Abishal Omer Mayim Oyayin Muter Kedel Tzachzecho May Raglayim Asur Mimnei HaKavod. It's just simply not covered. It's not bechavod. Meaning it may be an excellent cleansing agent, but still, it's just simply not appropriate. The shofar is a dvar mitzvah, and so it's simply not appropriate to go ahead and to use urine as a cleansing agent, as good as that may be. It's just simply not bechavod.
That's out of place in the Mishnah, because the rest of the Mishnah is all things you can't do on Rosh
Hashanah. You're right. Correct. But you're right. But it's only coming from an inference of the Mishnah, meaning the Mishnah itself is just focusing on what the fact that you can rinse it out with water and wine. And the Gemara just picked up on what the Mishnah didn't use as an example. It's just an inference. Ein ma'akvin es ha'tinok es matkoa ha'nashe ma'akvin. So the Gemara says, okay, now, who do we encourage? Now, the word encourage over here is a little bit strong, but it's okay. Who do we encourage to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah children? Now, if you're reading the Mishnah carefully, so what the Mishnah is clearly leaving out, it's conspicuously absent, is what about women? Meaning, now we already know, we've already established a couple times here in this parak, that women are not obligated in the mitzvah of shofar. Okay, but neither are children. Now, I understand that by children you also have a mitzvah of chinuch, but if the Mishnah was telling us that you can allow a child to blow shofar, so then the Mishnah should also mention something about, and you could also allow a woman to blow shofar as well. Meaning not that she's obligated, but at least if she's doing so, you don't have to stop her from doing so. So a critical read of the Mishnah would therefore indicate that if a woman were to pick up the shofar and blow, you'd ask her to stop. So hanashim ma'akvin v'atanya, ein ma'akvin lo hanashim v'lo sin tinokas mitzko b'yamto. Meanwhile, I'm going to be showing you a comparative brisa, and this brisa includes women and says that if a woman blows shofar in Rosh Hashanah, leave her alone, she's fine, right? Let her blow shofar. So what we have over here is obviously a discrepancy between the Mishnah and the brisa. The Mishnah inferentially is telling us you got to stop the women from blowing shofar, and then the brisa is telling us no, it's fine, let her blow shofar. So the Gemara says, "Amar Rabbi Lokasha, Ha Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Shimon." So the Gemara says, "Okay, what we're looking at over here is a machlokas atanayim, and the machlokas tanayim regarding a woman who is exempt from doing a mitzvah, can she opt into doing the mitzvah? This is a classic discussion, really, really basic." In terms of people, I mean, right now we're talking about women, but it's a more expansive discussion. Already women's 50% of the population, but it really is even more expansive people who are exempt from particular mitzvos, so can they elect and opt into doing the mitzvah? So the Gemara says it's a machlokas. The Tanya we learned in the Brisa. Dabra b'nei Yisrael samchim, menos Yisrael samchos. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So the shita of Rabbi Yehuda is that the mitzvah of smicha. Now the mitzvah of smicha is regarding karbanos. You bring karban to the base of Mikdash, and immediately prior to the shechita, the owner of the karban is going to put his hands on the karban and lean on the karban, and that is the mitzvah of smicha. See the Sefer Chinuch for an explanation of what the Torah is trying to communicate with us by doing this mitzvah of smicha. Anyway, it's a mitzvah of smicha. Let's just leave it like that for now. So now, Dabar el b'nei Yisrael. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, what's the Torah teaching us when it says Dabar el b'nei Yisrael? It means that the mitzvah of smicha only exists within the domain of men. Men of the mitzvah of smicha, and women, ve'ein b'nos Yisrael samchas, women cannot do smicha. Meaning, aside from the fact that they're exempt from doing the mitzvah of smicha, they can't do the mitzvah smicha, meaning even if they want to, they cannot do so. That's the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Shimon are menashim samchas rishos. So Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Shimon, on one hand agree, on one hand disagree. They agree that women are not obligated in the mitzvah smicha, but they disagree in that if they want to do so, if they want to elect to doing so, so but then by all means, they have the right to do so. They have the right, the privilege. They certainly can opt into doing a mitzvah, even though they're exempt from the mitzvah. And that now says the Gemara. So basically, it's a machlokas tanaim. So that is the discrepancy between the Mishnah and the Braisa. The Mishnah that says that if a wind picks up a shofar on Rosh Hashanah and starts blowing, so you can ask her to stop. So that's going like the Shita Rabbi Yehuda. The Braisa, on the other hand, that says that nah, go ahead if they want to blow shofar. So no need to stop them. Okay, again, where do we stand in terms of should you encourage it? That doesn't sound that way, but certainly there's no need to stop them. So that's going like the Shitas of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon. Good. I agree, but they're separate topics, and yeah. I'm not sure if the two issues correlate with one another. I don't suspect. Okay, brings us now to a really fundamental issue, and if you're looking at this really big Tosfos over here in our Amma today, which is occupying a good part of today's real estate, which makes today's daf shorter. So Tosfos is getting involved in what is a really fundamental debate. Although the truth of the matter is, it's not much of a debate in that. The vast majority of Rishonim are on one side, and quite frankly, the Rambam's on the other side. But it's still the Rambam, and the Shulchan Aruch falls like the Rambam. So it's, you know, but if you count Rishonim, so most Rishonim are on the side of, okay, so who do we follow like? Do we follow like Rabbi Huda or do we follow like Rabbi Yossi? One detail which I did not mention, by the way, which is really important, and as long as we're here, I'm going to mention it. So the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, which we don't follow. Which I'm going to give away in just a moment. The sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, which is that a woman who's exempt from doing a mitzvah cannot do the mitzvah. What is behind that sheet? Meaning, if you ask me, right, you don't have to ask me, but Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon seems to be much more mistaber. Meaning, the Torah just simply says they're exempt from doing the mitzvah. Okay, but if they want to opt into doing the mitzvah, why not? What would be the big deal for them to opt into to doing the mitzvah? So what is behind the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda that they can't opt in, which is not the most intuitive position. So Rashi over here writes, and this is a really interesting Rashi, right? And I heard more than one shiur on this Rashi. So Rashi over here writes, the Peturus Legamre, the Mitzvah Sese Shazman Gramahi, V'chi Take, Ika Bal Tosif. So Rashi writes something over here which is really striking and really interesting, and that is that according to Rabbi Yehuda, a woman who's not obligated in the Mitzvah of Shofar, she blows Shofar, she'll be in violation of Bal Tosif. She's adding to the mitzvahs of the Torah. Okay. Talk about something that really needs a lot of consideration and a lot of thought in terms of how could that be? Meaning Rashi said it. I read it. We're going to move on. Okay. The bigger discussion is that in of itself already is a big discussion, but the bigger discussion is that fine. So we're going to go like Rabbi Yossi, right? Tosfos in the very beginning of that long Tosfos says that we pass like Rabbi Yossi. So that women can opt into doing a mitzvah. Fine. So, and that's the conclusion. Meaning, on mitzvahs, essay, shazman grama, time-bound mitzvahs where women are exempt. If they want to opt in, they certainly have the right and the ability to opt in if they would like to do so. Are they going to be making a brichos a mitzvah when they do that mitzvah? Okay. In other words, good. So, does it come with a bracha or does it come without a bracha? That's the major discussion. The Gemara does not say. The Gemara just simply says it brings down the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. And we're going to assume that we pass on like Rabbi Yossi. But all we know from the Gemara is that if they want to do the mitzvah, they could do the mitzvah. From the Gemara itself, we do not have clear indication as to whether or not they're entitled to make a bracha. If you think about it, they shouldn't make the bracha. Why? Because the bracha says, Asher k'dishana b'mitzvosav v'tzivanu, and you commanded us. So for a woman to say that, that's not accurate. She wasn't commanded. She's doing the mitzvah, she's opting into the mitzvah, she wasn't commanded to do the mitzvah. In fact, the Rambam writes that when a woman does a mitzvah that she's not obligated to do, she's not going to make a bracha. Meaning she'll do the mitzvah, we do pasuk like Rabbi Yossi, she just simply won't make a bracha in doing so. And that is, the Shulchan Aruch goes like the sheet of the Rambam. So for the Bnei Sfard, so they're not going to be making a bracha on a mitzvah that they're not obligated to do. So for Bnei Sfard, a woman who wants to hear shofar in Rosh Hashanah, and she's Sfardi, so and no one else is hearing the shofar, no man is hearing the shofar, so you blow shofar without a bracha. It's really straightforward. That's the Rambam. But most of the Rishonim, Tosfos over here, spent a lot of time litigating this position. So, and Rabbeinu Tam, notably here in the Tosfos, is of the position that a woman is going to be making a brachas a mitzvah. And he goes over a lot of various proofs in terms of how we arrive at that conclusion. And this is where I'm going to tap out on the Tosfos, meaning go through Tosfos over here, where he really spends a lot of time litigating this issue in terms of whether or not a woman can make a bracha. The conclusion of Tosfos is that women can, in fact, make the bracha, and that is the position of the Ashkenazim. Ashkenazim, the Ramah, take the position that when a woman opts into doing a mitzvah, she'll make a bracha. Okay, we'll stop over here on this particular issue, but you can see in Tosfos, it's a really big issue. We're back into the Gemara. V'amasaskim behem ad shiyomadu. Amar Rabbi Lazar filo b'Shabbos. So Rabbi Lazar says, in terms of promoting children to blow shofar, so even if it's Rosh Hashanah Shabbos, we're still going to promote them in doing so. Tanya Namehachi, the Gemara quotes the Brisa. V'amasaskim behem ad shiyomadu afilo b'Shabbos. So even if it's Shabbos. V'ein ma'akvin etinokas melatkoa b'Shabbos. And you don't have to stop them from blowing shofar on Shabbos. And certainly Yantav, it would be a no-brainer as well. So Hagufa Kasha. So the Gemara says, okay. So now I got it. So because it's a child and because we're talking about learning how to blow shofar, so and they want to blow on Rosh Hashanah, even if Rosh Hashanah falls down on Shabbos, by all means, you should encourage them to do so. But the Gemara says, but I am bothered, and I already foreshadowed the question when we learned the Mishnah. Now the Gemara is going to ask it. What should the attitude be? Meaning, I'm getting mixed messages. On one hand, Ms. Askin, which means that you get involved, which means that you promote. You promote them to blow shofar. In other words, on Rosh Hashanah, encourage them to blow shofar. And then the Brisa says, Ein Ma'akvin. Don't stop them from doing so. That's a different attitude. That's not the attitude of promotion. It's the attitude of, look, all right, I'm not telling you to do it, but if you want to blow shofar, I'm not going to stop you. So which attitude is the correct attitude? So Amart misaskim behem ashim adu afilu b'shabbos amalachat chilam rinatiku. And the Gemara just spells out the question. First, the Brisa says that the attitude is, yeah, go blow. Blow the shofar. V'hadu tana eim ha'akvin ikuvo de la ma'akvin. Halachat chila lo arminatiku. And then meanwhile, it says eim ha'akvin, which gives me the impression the attitude is, I'm not going to stop you from doing so. So which one is the correct attitude? So lo kashya, so the Gemara says, no, it's not difficult. It depends. It depends what age child we're talking about. If the child is Igil Achinuch, look at the top Rashi. So there, for sure, there you have encouragement. Because there, you have not just a child, but a child who's reached the point of Chinuch. So we want to now start training in mitzvah. So now if you want to train in mitzvah, you want to encourage. So good. So you give him a shofar and let him blow and encourage him to do so. But if it's a katan shaloi geach lechinuch, so now he's too young. There's no real chinuch involved over here. So over here, attitudinally, so don't encourage him to do so. But if he wants to blow shofar, don't stop him from doing so. Ha misasik lo yatza. Huh?
I mean, you're giving him the wrong education.
No, I understand. But we're talking about Rosh Hashanah Shabbos. But still, your point is really good. Meaning, you're right. In other words, the Klal Yisrael doesn't blow on Rosh Hashanah Shabbos. Okay, so, but I guess just for the purposes of learning over here, so even under those circumstances, the mitzvah of chinuch is going to trump. And again, he's a child, so he's not yet mechuyav b'davar. But your point is excellent. The v'amisasik lo yatza, and now as we are on the very top of Lamed Gimel Amed Beis, so second line down, so ha tokeh l'shir yatza. So the Mishnah says that misasek. Now misasek is a really important term, and it needs a little bit of work in terms of defining exactly what misasek means. Misasek means that you're doing something without any consciousness whatsoever. There's no thought involved in what you're doing. Misasek would just simply mean that, Ben suggested by rote, it's like you're just simply, you're right, it's just a habit that you do, and you have no thought behind it whatsoever. You're not even aware that you're blowing a horn. In other words, now by shofar, I don't know why that is, meaning what, you're doing it every day? Who knows? It doesn't matter. The point is that the Mishnah says that the misasek is lo yatsa. Now, what the Gemara is going to do is that, obviously, the Mishnah is giving us the most extreme version, which means that if I pare back just a little bit, so that means you're going to be yotze. So right now, the Gemara is thinking, well, if misasek is not going to be yotze, so that means to say that if I just have a little bit of kavana, what does that mean, a little bit of kavana? Meaning, I don't have the kavana to do mitzvah, but at least I have kavana that I'm blowing a shofar. So if I have just a modicum of kavana, so then I'm going to be yotze. That's what the Gemara thinks. Hatokei lishir yatsa. So if on Rosh Hashanah I pick up the shofar in order to belt out a tune, not for the mitzvah, but to belt out a tune, you're going to be yotze. You understand how the Gemara arrived at that conclusion? Since the Mishnah said misasek is mindless. So once I have some thought that's involved, so that's going to be good enough.
I mean, there's no intent to fulfill the mitzvah.
There was no intent. The Mishnah's example is that there was no intent, period. Nothing. It was a
second one is that there's no intent to fulfill the
mitzvah. Okay, good. So right now the Gemara believes that there's this middle category. Now, if in fact there's this middle category, so what is it going to tell us about mitzvahs requiring kavana? Good. So this is a callback to what we did just a couple days ago. So the Gemara says, Lema Misayila the Rava. And not only that, but this will support the position Rava. Dama Rava, Hatokela Shir Yatza. So Rava's of the position that, yeah, if I blow shofar in Rosh Hashanah, not for the intention of doing the mitzvah, but at least I want to blow shofar, meaning I want to belt out a tune, so you're going to be yotzei. So the Gemara says, no. Dilma Tokela Shir Nami Misase Karile. So the Gemara says, yeah, but maybe our fundamental error is that we didn't translate misasek correctly. Misasek could very well mean that I did not have kavanah to fulfill the mitzvah. Meaning so that tequila shir falls under the category of misasek, and that's included in the Mishnah that says that you fulfill the mitzvah. Maybe the Mishnah is actually teaching us that in order to fulfill the mitzvah, you actually need kavanah to do the mitzvah. Okay, so once again, the Gemara quickly, just a couple of lines, relitigates the issue of whether or not mitzvah shrichos kavana do not require kavana. Our Mishnah could be used as support for Rava, but the Gemara says not necessarily. And once again, we leave ourselves off with a lack of conclusion in the Gemara in terms of whether or not mitzvahs require kavana. Mitzvahs do not require kavana. Good. Shulchan Aruch's position, I don't know if I mentioned this the other day. Shulchan Aruch's position is really clear. Mitzvahs do in fact require kavana. Certainly by Mitzvahs Doraisa. By Mitzvahs Dorabanan, so maybe there's something to speak more about. But and obviously Shulchan Aruch is based on a number of Rishonim. Okay, again, not for now. Okay, let's go on. Hashomeh min ha-misasek lo yatsa. If you hear from somebody who misasek, you have not fulfilled your obligation. So aval shomeh min ha-mashmeh la-atzmo mai yatsa. Again, an inference of the Mishnah, deek in the Mishnah, where in the Mishnah, it would indicate that as long as the Baal Tokeah at least has himself in mind, he's going to be, you, the listener, are going to be yotze. Why? Again, because what we're doing is that we start with the Mishnah and we just simply pare back from the Mishnah. Meaning the Mishnah tells us that if the Baal Tokeah has no intention whatsoever, so then under those circumstances, the listener has not fulfilled his obligation. So now what we're going to do is just scale back just a little bit, meaning he has kavanah for himself. You, the Shomei, are going to listen. The Gemara says, okay, good. The Gemara says, yeah, it's good, but not good. But lema te'avit yufta de Rabbi Zeira. So once again, right, another callback to what we did a couple days ago, and that is the Shita Rabbi Zeira. Remember, Rabbi Zeira said to his attendant, right, his shamish, right, you're going to blow, and you're going to make sure to have me in mind. Right? Rabbi Zeira was definitive that that's necessary in order to fulfill the mitzvah. But the way we just learned our Mishnah is not going like that, and that seems like if our assessment of our Mishnah is correct, That means that Rebbe Zera's position is not a tenable position. Okay, so the Gemara just simply goes over the Maisa. So the Gemara says, no. Dilma Aidi de Tanereisha Masasek Tanesefa Nami Masasek. So the Gemara says, yeah, but don't get caught up in the language of the Mishnah. Now, I know that's funny because what do we do all day when we're learning Gemara? We get caught up in the language of the Mishnah. In fact, that's what we're supposed to do. But sometimes, and here's an example, sometimes the Gemara says the Mishnah's choice of language is just simply a function of symmetry. Meaning once the Mishnah said on the front end, Misasek, so then the Mishnah on the back end also is using Misasek, but that's just for symmetrical purposes. We've gone over this point numerous times. The Mishnah is meant to be memorized. So if the Mishnah has a structure to it, like almost like a poetic structure to it, so it's much easier to commit to memory. So fine. So sometimes the Mishnah does that, borrows language, even though the word might be a little bit misleading. Okay. Obviously, just make this point even clearer. Obviously, the first usage of that word obviously is meant for inference purposes. But the second usage of the word sometimes could just simply be for structure. Okay, so the Gemara says, then that's the case over here. And if, in fact, that's the case over here, we have not disputed, we have not refuted the position of Rebbe Zera. Let's stop. Okay, the great place to stop. All right, if you look ahead over here, forecast. So we really just have a daf and a half in order to finish the Masechta. We'll leave ourselves off something for Shabbos in order to what to talk about. But this will be a good stopping point. And anyway, we're on the Mishnah that's going to be discussing the how to blow shofar, right? And so, as I mentioned in the beginning of Daf today, it's really interesting that there's really little in terms of the Gemara relative to the rest of the Masechta in terms of how to actually blow the shofar, how to produce the sounds, what are the sounds supposed to sound like, how many times are we supposed to do that, all that's coming up in tomorrow's Daf. In the meantime, a quick recap and review of today's Daf. Really a lot of fundamental issues to discuss in today's Daf, right? You can spend a lot more time. We opened up with the first Mishnah that talks about where is the proper placement of shofar in Rosh Hashanah. It's during Musaf, it's not during Shacharis. Halal is during Shacharis, but not in Rosh Hashanah. Another Yamim Tovim, but shofar is during Musaf. Now, what the Gemara introduced us to is that really there are competing values. On one hand, more people ensure later in the day, Rav Amadras Melech. On the other hand, Zeriza Makdim LaMitzvos. So when it comes to halal, so we're going to go with Zeriza Makdim LaMitzvos. Why don't we say the same thing by shofar? So the Gemara's answer is, there's a historical answer to that question. Again, the Gemara gave us very precious little in terms of giving us details regarding the historical event. We went through Rashi, we went through Tosfos this morning. Good. That was part one. Next, we discussed the Mishnah for the remainder of the day, talking about that you are not allowed to violate Isuri de Rabbanan nor Isuri de Raisa in order to fulfill the mitzvah of shofar. The Mishnah Gate went through different scenarios which would in fact represent Isuri de Rabbanan, Isuri de Raisa. You can't violate any of them not to fulfill them, even though on the other side of that you'd be fulfilling the mitzvah of shofar, but you can't do so. Don't we say that a positive commandment overrides a negative prohibition? That's a dochalos asay. To which the Gemara's response is, yeah, Yontiv is an asay and a los asay. So therefore, the equation does not balance. And therefore, you can't violate. Other big discussions that we had this morning on Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph, the attitude that we have regarding women blowing shofar. Meaning, should we discourage them from doing so, asking them to stop, or should we leave them alone in the event that they want to blow shofar? And the Gemara taught us that it's a machlokas tanayim in terms of whether or not women can opt into a mitzvah essay, that they're not obligated to do so. Machlokas between Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Yossi, and that will explain the discrepancy between the Mishnah and the Braisa. And as we pointed out this morning, the Rishonim Tosfos over here, all the Rishonim passing like Rabbi Yossi, that women can in fact opt into doing a mitzvah even if they are not obligated to do so. Major discussion amongst the Rishonim, which we touched on this morning. Can they make a berachas mitzvah in doing so? Most Rishonim say yes, the Rambam says no, and the Shulchan Aruch falls like the psak of the Rambam. Children, do we encourage children to blow shofar? The answer is yes. And once they get to the age of chinuch, so there the attitude is that we promote. We encourage them to do so. Before chinuch, you don't have to stop them from blowing, but once they arrive at chinuch, so then we are going to promote them in doing so. We then once again opened up the case on whether mitzvahs require kavanah or do not require kavanah. Our Mishnah seems to be taking a position on the matter, and the Gemara says, you know what? not necessarily. The Mishnah could be read differently. And then finally, Rabbi Zeru says that the Baal Tokeya has to have the listener in mind. So our Mishnah seems to be going against that position. The Gemara says not necessarily to that as well. Adkan.
Tomorrow morning.